After the Ryan report, the Murphy report, the investigations into the mother and baby institutions, the Magdalen laundries, it might feel that we can't be shocked by the scale and the brutality of the terror inflicted on children by some members of the Catholic Church and those who work in religious-run institutions. And yet, what has now been revealed by those investigating allegations of abuse in schools run by religious orders is really quite shocking. 2,395 allegations of abuse by 884 alleged abusers in 308 schools across 24 counties over a 30-year period, but mostly in the early to mid-1970s. Most of those abused were men. 590 of the allegations were made by people who had attended 17 different special schools. Even the word abuse doesn't seem to fully describe what happened to them. Many described being molested, stripped naked, drugged and raped in an atmosphere of terror and silence. Many also said the abuse itself was accompanied by other ferocious violence. Some of the most distressing testimony spoke of priests and teachers sexually abusing children in front of other students, in front of other adults, in the middle of the classroom. Some children went to extreme lengths to avoid going back to school to face further abuse. One boy spent his summer holiday finding a spot on the road where he would be sure he would be hit by a car if he threw himself in front of it. RT's primetime programme last night heard from a number of men who were abused. Michael Mansfield was preyed upon and assaulted at both Willow Park and Blackrock College in Dublin.
It was a very painful time for me, a time I really felt I had nowhere to go in terms of telling my story and had to figure out a way on my own how to deal with it. It took a long time to come to terms with it, but I was very lucky that I had a very supportive family that was there for me and gave me support in many ways and helped me cope with it in lots of ways. But it did have a very serious impact in terms of my life going forward.
Cornelius Crowley is originally from Cork. He was placed in guardianship when his mother became ill. He was sexually abused in 5 boarding schools in this state from the age of 5 and a half. He now lives in London. He said the abuse had a profound impact on his whole life.
I didn't start counselling on this until I was 62. I've carried it inside myself all my life. I've been walking around with paranoia going on inside me. I'd be interacting with people and be paranoid about it and not say anything and try and cope with that and try and behave normally for all of my life. I've been depressed. I've been homeless. I've been on drugs. It's been a mess because I have not been able to trust anyone or trust myself. And I internalize it all as there was something wrong with me.
Mark Vincent Healy was abused at St Mary's College in Dublin. He hopes that the national focus, which is now on this issue, will help answer questions of why the abuse was allowed to continue for so long.
We're now at that level. We're at the highest level nationally to try and answer those sorts of conundrums and questions, which allowed for this element and level of abuse to have prospered and to have continued for so many decades. And yet, why was it never stopped? What was impeding the proper attention to care for children placed in danger and at risk, as we obviously have from the testimony of all of us?
There is help available this morning if you're affected by what we're talking about on the programme. rte.ie/helplines is the place to go. A number of services are available there. I'll give that address at the end of this section on the programme. With us in studio now is Dr. Joseph Mooney, an expert in retrospective disclosures of childhood sexual abuse. He's a lecturer and assistant professor of social policy, social work and social justice at UCD. Dr. Mooney, you're very welcome and thank you for being with us this morning. Listening there to those three men and so many others who have talked about what has happened to them and its effects, can you give us a sense from the work that you've done what impact revealing their childhood abuse as an adult would have on them?
Yeah, so I suppose first to just acknowledge the experiences shared by those impacted by the abuse that has come to light in the scoping inquiry, and I'm sure our thoughts and the nation's thoughts are with those individuals this morning and yesterday when the report was launched. In terms of sharing their experiences. I suppose the report is interesting in that we're gathering testimony and experiences from adults who've had that life course, I suppose, experience of dealing with the impacts of abuse in childhood. And I suppose in terms of disclosure itself, we often think of it in tandem with abuse, but it is quite a distinct phenomenon. People can have different interactions and relationships with the concept of disclosure and their experiences of disclosure. From the research, we know that people face extreme barriers in terms of coming forward to disclose childhood sexual abuse, both internally but also societally. And those societal impacts, you can hear some of them there in the testimonies this morning and played from the primetime reports last night, in terms of impact on their sense of self, impact on their employment opportunities, impact on their education, impact on their relationships with others. And core to all of that is this sense of a lack of trust, that trust having been shattered at that point in childhood. We heard the quote from one, and it was covered widely yesterday, about their childhood having stopped at that point when the abuse commenced. So that trust being shattered, but also that sense of being not being believed, and also sort of not being able to sort of form those relationships that allow us to get our employment and our education experiences and our relationship experiences.
So what leads them to disclose decades after the abuse has happened?
So this is a very much an individual experience. Many do not. We often talk about disclosure across the research for decades now as the tip of the iceberg. Our own SAVI report, the Sexual Abuse and Violence Survey conducted here in Ireland back in the early 2000s, one of the stark statistics from that is that of those who had experienced childhood sexual abuse, almost 50%, 47% hadn't disclosed until they were asked in the interview. So one of the things that does prompt people to disclose is being asked. And that's one of the significant components of this inquiry, the scoping inquiry, that it has asked people. The inquiry itself is understanding of that, in that once a commission is set up in whatever format that might take, more people will come forward. So one of the dynamics of disclosure is feeling safe, feeling there's a space for you, feeling that you're going to be heard. We don't often have those spaces in society, and that's why we don't often have disclosure, and it is a tip of the iceberg.
And is it also, Dr. Mooney, related to the feelings that some people might have if they're abused? They might feel they're the only ones. And then hearing a documentary like Black Rock Boys 2 years ago tells them that they were not alone, that there were others.
Yeah, and we see this time and time again when abuse scandals unfortunately break into public knowledge. We see this common sort of experience of people feeling they're the only ones being affected at the time. And this really ties back to grooming dynamics and abuse dynamics, this concept of power, access and opportunity and silence that hovers over it all, of really sort of taking a person away from their social structures, slowly grooming them, making them either feel special or making them feel like they need to be punished in some sense, and making them feel like they're the only one. We've had experiences in this country of abuse in familial settings where the individual felt they were the only one being abused, when in fact their siblings were also being abused. The inquiry is interesting in that it deals with that, but it also deals with this notion of horrific experiences of abuse in public, essentially, in the classroom, in front of other children, in front of other adults. So while we have a knowledge that some survivors and victims felt they were the only ones, we also know from this scoping inquiry that people were well aware that others were being abused.
And the people who gave testimonies talked about a conspiracy of silence remaining in place for so long that allowed the abuse to continue. What does justice look like in this case? The Commission of Inquiry, we don't know what it will cover yet. There will be one. Can that deliver justice?
Well, I suppose it's important to point out this morning, especially as we're all grappling with the results of the scoping inquiry, that for a vast many people, justice will never be achieved. As many of the people are since deceased that have been affected by the abuse, and we won't really ever get a grasp of how many in that sense. So for those individuals and their families, justice will never be achieved. For the individuals and survivors at the moment who have given their testimony to the scoping inquiry, justice will look I suppose, different to each of them. And it's important that any sort of commission and any sort of governmental or state response is able to adhere to that and is able to adapt to that. That abuse and experiences of abuse throughout the life course are as individual as the individuals themselves. It's very hard to develop systems and structures that respond to individual needs, but that is the essence of trauma-informed care. It's a term that gets bandied about quite a bit, but at its essence, it's about adapting to people's individual needs and meeting them where they're at. The scoping inquiry is quite strong on this. It has gone through the various forms that the commission could take. It is promoting a commission of inquiry, and I tend to support that. It has a level of flexibility to it. It's also proposing to pair that with a survivor engagement programme for those who don't want to go through the formal process, providing them a space and an opportunity. And we know from the research that providing that space and opportunity is key. So in terms of justice, it will look different to different individuals. I think whatever format this takes, it's about being heard and being seen and being acknowledged. And that goes for those who are still with us, but also those who have gone before and are now deceased.
Thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us this morning. That's Dr. Joseph Mooney, an expert in retrospective disclosures of childhood sexual abuse and a lecturer and assistant professor of social policy, social work and social justice at UCD.